Starting. There you go. Hello and welcome to 100% Real with Ruby. Today I have on Dr. Karin Nordin, and I am just so excited to have her on because the thing that nearly 98.9675% of people struggle with is not nutrition itself. It's not training itself. And funnily enough, this morning I had a conversation with a lady who said, oh, I just don't think I'm disciplined enough, or that I don't want it enough, or I don't know what it is. I'm like, what do you mean you don't want it enough? It's not the fact that you're not disciplined, because it has nothing to do with that. And it's not the fact that you don't want it enough, because what's it? Maybe it's the fact that you're approaching your mindset a poo-poo, like absolutely bullshit. If you try to clean yourself to something that isn't working for you, of course you're not going to do it. And there's no one better than Karin to talk about behavior change, to talk about the big things that no one in the industry really talks about. And it's because nutrition is flashy. Before and after photos are flashy. But what does that matter if you can't enjoy the process? What does it matter if it's not aligned to your values and the person that you want to become? What if it's not something that's growing you, because you can cling yourself to something that actually sabotages you? And a little, not what I expected to start with, but maybe a way that you can introduce yourself and introduce this is talking about maybe the fact that people find a need to cling to habits they find themselves already good at because they don't want to do something that's hard. So, oh, I can just declutter my room. Oh, I need to declutter the house. It's messy anyway. Instead of doing something that they told themselves they need to do to better themselves, like planning their food, showing up for training, but instead it's just gravitating towards something that they can just tick off, like completion kind of thing. So,
yeah, absolutely. So let me introduce myself. So my name is Karin Nordin. As Ruby said, I have a PhD in health behavior change, which means that my expertise kind of sits at the intersection of your mindset and your behavior. So how the way you think about yourself and you think about your identity and you think about your actions interacts with your behavior. And the reason that I have this PhD is because I was the girl my entire life that struggled with the things I wanted to accomplish. I struggled with the way I ate and my eating patterns. I struggled with having massive resistance to any kind of like movement or gym activity. So I was constantly telling myself I would exercise and then constantly skipping it over and over and over again. My eating patterns were crazy. I had tons of emotional eating going on. I would tell myself like, I'm going to stick to this diet. And the next day I would be off of it and doing another thing. And even basic things, right? Like keeping my house clean, or like showing up for myself, or going to bed on time instead of scrolling on my phone. Like all of those things were so hard for me. And I reached for self-help. Like I reached for the self-help books, the things that talked about willpower and discipline. And I heard all of the things that people say about like, it's just that you don't want it enough, or you're just not disciplined and you have to strengthen your willpower. And I heard all of that stuff and I followed all the formulas I was supposed to follow to make it better. And it never worked. And so at some point I was like, whoa, I got to get to the science of this. And what I discovered was that 95% of what's out there in the world about your mindset and your behavior and what's stopping you from your achieving your goals is absolute and total bullshit. So that's me, right? But in terms of your question though, like what you're asking me is, why is it easier to stick to the habits that we're used to that make us feel good rather than the thing we're trying to change about ourselves, right? So why is it easier to sit on the couch and watch Netflix like you always do after work instead of getting that workout in, right? And so two answers. So one is that your brain is biologically wired to drive you towards safety and psychological safety. And sitting on the couch doing the thing that you've always done is really psychologically safe. So if you're in an environment where you feel a lot of stress where like there are dangers around you, whether that's like toxic people or like a toxic workplace or things like that, you're gaining your sense of psychological safety by sticking to the regular patterns of behavior that you always have been, right? And then the other reason, number two, which is kind of where I specialize, is that a lot of people have a fixed mindset about specific things. So a fixed mindset means you don't believe a certain characteristic or quality can change. So like a classic example of that is, I'm never motivated to work out. You might have a fixed mindset about your ability to get yourself to go work out. You're like, I've never been able to get myself to go to the gym consistently. It's just not something that's ever going to happen for me.
The growth and fixed mindset is something that looks simple on paper, but I don't think many people really grasp the concept of how it feels, because what it looks like is completely different to what it should feel like. And because we're emotional beings, we go based off our feelings because that impacts our emotions. But if it's just like, oh, I just don't have a growth mindset, but it's like, yeah, but what would it feel like to actually move in the direction that's going to have you feeling a certain way? Oh, but I just want to lose weight. Yeah, yeah. But how would it feel to do the things? And something that you speak a lot about, which I want you to tie into the growth mindset, is embracing the hard. There is nothing wrong with facing resistance. It's normal. Like, it's normal, but it's this big fear thing that's come along. And I feel like because social media is so rah, rah, rah about one thing and then rah, rah, rah about the other, people are always questioning, oh my God, is this the wrong thing to do? Oh my God, this is hard. Maybe it's the wrong thing for me. So people question all of that stuff, which only feeds the, this is hard, I can't do this. And then that feeds the fixed mindset narrative.
Yeah. And the two are really related. So for one thing, people, a lot of people have actually heard about a growth mindset, but they think it means that you just like generally think you can try hard and achieve your goals. But what the research shows is that growth mindset can actually be what we call domain specific. So you can have specifically a fixed mindset about your ability to, let's say, lose weight. And I, like, we have so many clients that I've worked with who had a fixed mindset about their ability to lose weight. And what that sounds like is they're like, I've been overweight for years. I've tried every diet in the book. I think there's something wrong with my body. It must be my hormones. It must be my genetics. Like, everyone in my family is overweight. And because you've tried so many times and failed so many times, you have developed this idea that you're not the type of person who can lose weight successfully. You look at the evidence in your past and you're like, there's no way that I can do this. Right? And so then when you come face to face with doing something that's difficult, right? That's doing something with doing something that's uncomfortable, like choosing a salad in front of your family that all expects you to order the hamburger, or like going to the gym after work when you're tired. Growth mindset is deeply related to our perseverance and our ability to deal with obstacles. So what that means is that if you don't believe you can actually achieve your goal, why would you put the effort in to do something that's hard? Versus if you have a growth mindset and you're like, I believe I can get better at losing weight. I believe this is a journey. I believe that controlling my nutrition and my behavior and my exercise is something that it's a skill that I am learning. Then that obstacle, that really hard thing, it becomes a challenge. Right? It becomes something that you're actually interested in doing and actually motivated to do, because challenges are fun for our brain.
I love that twist of the way that you see it. Like, you're making it a challenge versus an obstacle, but it's like, yeah, but it's too hard a challenge. Yeah, but that's the thing. It leads to opportunity. But something you said there, which I love, because we both say this as well, is you are scared to make a change because you're basing any future outcome on past predicaments, And you mentioned evidence in the past. And this is a really hard thing for so many people, because going off that conversation I mentioned this morning with that lady, two coaches, I'm gonna put in quotation mark coaches, because I would not consider them coaches. Like, just no. Some people are just no. But because people deal with that shit, they get put through like the freaking ringer, like the washing machine, going round and round and round with dumb shit. And that's the evidence they have. Oh, any single time I follow the diet, I did really well, I got results. But then I started trying to include some wine again. I started including some pizza again. And then I just put all the weight back on. They failed. But that's the evidence they have, because that's the way they tried. So then they try again. And then it's someone else that promotes intermittent fasting and then eating clean on this many calories. But then they lose the shit again and blow it off there. So that is their evidence. Yeah. How can we reframe that with the challenge, with bringing into it the self-belief? Because I feel like most people actually don't have that. I never had that, and I still struggle with it, which is why I have faith as my biggest tattoo. I have trust your wings as my other tattoo. I have fearless as one of my other tattoos. Like, it's hard to believe in yourself, to do things you've never done before. And there again is the embracing resistance. And maybe you can talk a little bit more on that with the identity shift.
Yeah, yeah. So what I always tell clients is that you will never have evidence in your past for something you want to create in your future. You won't. That's impossible, because otherwise you would already have it, right? So like, let's say, I always use this example. I want you to remember back to when you were like a teenager and you started drinking coffee for the first time, okay? In America, at least, there's not many children who drink coffee. I get that that's very different in like other countries, especially Europe. My family is from Sweden, so I get that this is not inapplicable. But in America, right? It's like, I didn't really start drinking coffee until I was 17, 18. Really in college, so let's say 21, okay? Now I drink coffee every day. If my 21-year-old self had said, ugh, I really want to drink coffee every single day, but I don't see any evidence in my past that that's possible. That I will never find evidence in my past for the thing I want in the future. The version of me who did not drink coffee will never provide evidence for the version of me that does drink coffee. If we want evidence of becoming a new person or of adopting a new behavior, we have to create that evidence. We will never find it in our past. And that's usually what I tell clients.
I think the biggest thing a lot of women struggle with is actually seeing some more consistency in the gym and following a new way of eating that's completely different from what they used to do, especially when their evidence in the past has been failure. And something I see a lot, and something that everyone already knows, fell prey to, is clinging to external motivation. Like, oh, I want to do this comp. This is going to motivate me. Oh, but Jane Doe on the internet's doing this, so I want to make sure that I do the same thing as her, because that's how she got her body. And then people play the comparison game as well. But people don't understand that a lot of their motivation is actually external. Like, they think it's not, but it is. How exactly can we distinguish between those? And how does external motivation hold us back from true moving forward?
Yeah, great question. So I have a monthly membership called Change Academy, and I do a 1.5-hour workshop every month on a change topic. And I think you're asking me this because you know the workshop for this month, which I just did earlier today, was about motivation. So I literally have spent the whole last week in the research weeds reading about motivation science. So I'll give you like a little tidbit of like what I covered in the workshop. So basically there are two different types of motivation. There's intrinsic and extrinsic. And intrinsic is like, I do this because I want to. I do this because it feels good. I do this because I like doing it. I do this because it brings me joy, right? Extrinsic is like, I'm doing this to get a result, right? So it's the difference between like, ooh, I really love grapes, I want to eat some, and ooh, I need to eat some grapes because I told my coach that I would have 300 grams of fruit today, right? Here's the problem, or what the research says. Extrinsic motivation is really great for a while, but it can have essentially a backfiring effect. And what happens there is that we rely so much on extrinsic motivation that we lose our intrinsic motivation. So it's like, I'm only doing this. I'm only going for my run to check off the box. I'm only going to the gym because I'm on the workout plan and I want to lose weight, right? And so then when we either when we get there to that goal, or even before we get to that goal, because we don't have any intrinsic motivation anymore, we actually lose our motivation completely. And that's why you get women who are in these cycles of like, I go, 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 go. And then I do nothing and I sit on the couch. And then I go super, super healthy and work out all the time. And then I do nothing and sit on the couch. It's because you rely so heavily on extrinsic motivation, it backfires. And then you're left with no intrinsic motivation. And so that is the problem with rewards, right? Rewards can really backfire.
Yeah. I actually didn't know you did that topic. It's just that being able to have my own intrinsic motivation is what's got me to where I am now, to where I feel so fulfilled, even with the not normal, because there's no really normal. It's like, for me as well, I know you can relate to this one, which is what I want to actually talk about, you being more consistent with your training and being a tidy person eventually. But like, when I was chasing the comps, when I was chasing the look, when I was trying to stay lean while also trying to build muscle, while also trying to get freaking strong, that was all an extrinsic thing, to the point where I was crying in a lot of my gym sessions towards the end because I lost the joy. I felt like a failure when I didn't hit my reps. I felt like a failure when I couldn't hit the weight I was supposed to hit for a certain thing. And then when I was doing the comps, it was like comp after comp after comp, because I needed that extrinsic motivation. Because then what was the alternative? I don't want to be a lazy person. I'm going to become lazy again. I'm going to get fat. I'm going to lose all my progress. I'm just going to become a slob. Like, that was the fear that drove me, but I had nothing to drive me. I didn't have that, which we're going to talk about next. I didn't have that moving towards goal, which is why I always say you need to have a very strong drive that, here we go again, makes you feel a certain way. But it's not just that, it's how is this going to help you show up better? How is this going to impact your values? If your values are your family, your relationship, and everything you are doing is counteracting that, how are you going to continue with that? If the coach you have is having you sacrifice your date nights, how is that in line with your values? And breaking through that to have my own intrinsic motivation, which I actually thank COVID for, because it forced me to actually build my own up and go through all the emotions of that. I actually enjoy what I do now because I want to feel a certain way. I know, like, for me, my motivation is I don't want to know what it's like to not have a fit body, because I feel healthy. I have energy. I show up when I don't want to show up to the gym because I know the alternative is it's like, what if this leads into another day and then another day, and then I'm going to feel weak. I'm going to lose that energy. That, like, just showing up gives you the confidence. So maybe you can tie that into how you now showing up for yourself has
led to the same thing. Yeah. So the interesting thing is that a lot of times I hear coaches say, like, oh, you need to do like the five whys exercise, right? You need to like connect to your deeper values. You need to like understand why this means something to you. Like, what does working out mean for you, right? And that is awesome. That's really good, right? But what we know from our human experience is that our brains sometimes have difficulty caring about rewards that are really far away. It's hard for us to consistently care about the person we're going to be 3 months from now who's stronger. It's hard for us to consistently care about our aging self that wants us to go to the gym so our joints are strong, right? It's very easy for our brain to care and be motivated by things like joy, happiness, excitement, curiosity, like feelings of intrinsic motivation. And so that's why intrinsic motivation is more sustainable, right? And so I'm going to talk about a client I had, and then I'm going to talk about me. But I had a client once who came to me. So I'm a behavior change coach. I coach explicitly behavior change. I don't coach nutrition at all. We talk about eating patterns, but it's not macros. It's not protein based. It's like very much we're focusing on your behavior. So we coach a lot of things outside of nutrition as well. So I had a client come to me. She was in the military and she hated running. Okay. This is a problem. If you're in the military, you have to run. But she hated it. And so she was getting in trouble essentially at work. Like she was missing marks. She was on track to not pass her fitness test and like lose her career because she wasn't able to get herself to run as much as she wanted to. And she had all the extrinsic motivation in the world, right? She had every factor holding her accountable and telling her she had to go running. And even that wasn't enough. And what a lot of people say to me is like, okay, well, that's well and great, but I just don't like vegetables. That's well and great, but I just don't like exercising. And so to that, I say like, what if you had a growth mindset and believed you could learn to like it? So with this particular client, we started by having her like recognize how beautiful the scenery was when she did get out for a run. So she just focused on like loving the scenery, right? And then after a little while, she practiced like noticing the fresh air and she practiced reinterpreting like the way she was breathing as not panic, but like challenge and success and exertion and fitness and strong. And so by the end of our time together, she would like tell me like, oh, I went for a run because it stopped me from stressing out. Like it felt really good. And so that's like the message I want to give all of you is that remember that even if you're not right now intrinsically motivated to do an activity, building that is way more important than finding some arbitrary external source that will force you into things. And that's what I found for myself too, right? Like I'm training for a powerlifting meet right now. So I do have that sense of external accountability. But for me, it's like, I have to constantly remind myself and manage my mind around the benefits of exercising in any given moment. And like, why do I want to close my computer, actually have work-life balance and go to the gym? Like, why is that important to me? Why does that matter to me? And what benefit is it going to give me literally today? That's what I think about a lot.
And it does give us a lot of benefit today. And I don't think a lot of us realize this stuff because the only thing that we focus on when we start anything is I need to weigh this. I need to lose this much. Well, you're not going to freaking lose that much in one bloody day. So of course you're not going to feel good for showing up. Oh, it's just showing up again. Well, what is that? Like, why is this behavior important? Like sometimes it is important to know that outcome, but the outcome is the North Star. And if you live in the outcome, you're never going to get to the outcome because it's the process that gets you to the outcome. And if we stay married to that outcome, it's still that extrinsic motivation because you're not going to allow yourself to shift your goalposts. And then this outcome starts becoming the horizon that you're always running to that never actually comes. And you don't know how many times you'll fall over in the process, but you might fall over and then not even want to try anymore because, hey, the horizon never comes. But something you said, which I love, I'll touch on that at the end of this, but tangible things you can do to create these shifts and discipline versus skill development, because you mentioned learning to like it. And then everything's a skill. Like building a habit is a skill. Reframing your thoughts is a skill. And an analogy that I have, which I can't find the damn reel for because I made it forever ago, is every single time you repeat a certain habit, it's like you're adding and building a handle on it. The more you repeat it, the more handles you are building on it, and the easier it gets to pick it up. So that's the same with your negative self-talk. So think about it in that sense. But you mentioned the way that you said the word mind, and then I thought about mind management, and that's tech. That's literally what it is, because it's not that it's easier for us. It's just that we have better ways to talk to ourselves and manage our mindset, because it's freaking like 0 degrees here every time I wake up. Zero degrees Celsius because it's winter. The last thing I want to do is get out of bed, especially when I have both my dogs snuggling me. But I talk myself to, like, I have a 5 minute rule where it's like when my alarm goes off, I give myself 5 minutes and then I need to get up. But it's like the last thing I want to do is get up at 4:30 a.m. and start my day to go to the gym. But it's the mind management skills. And that's something that you're extremely good at speaking on. So take that for a run.
Yeah, yeah. So what most people think of as discipline is actually a culmination of a lot of different mental skills that someone is using. So I always think about like that influencer that I see who like gets up every morning super early. She like takes her pre-workout and she makes it to the gym. Okay. And she, this influencer always says like, oh, I'm just, there are some days when I don't want to do it, but I'm just disciplined. Okay. And so let's unpack like what's actually going on there. Okay. So first of all, that person probably has a heightened level of awareness of what's going on in her actual thoughts. Okay. So here's how it works. You think thoughts in your brain, they create feelings in your body, and then those feelings drive your behavior. So you think to yourself, it's so warm in this bed and it's so cold outside, then you feel dread at the thought of like getting up and being cold. And so then the behavior you choose is to stay in bed. Okay. If you are aware enough of that thought to recognize it as a thought, that is something we call cognitive diffusion, which is when you can say, my brain is telling me that I don't want to get up, but I know that I actually do want to get up, right? People have a really, really difficult time with cognitive diffusion. They think they don't do it, right? And so they're cognitively fused. They think their thoughts are real. And so when their brain tells them, I'm too tired to go to the gym, they treat that as a fact. And then they're like frustrated with their level of tiredness rather than saying, my brain is telling me I'm too tired to go to the gym. Is that really true? Why is my brain telling me that? And is there a more helpful thought I can choose? So the people who have, quote, discipline have a higher level of awareness about their own thoughts. They have more cognitive diffusion skills. So they can say, sure, my brain was telling me I didn't want to do it, but I was able to say, here's why I actually do, right? They tend to also have more systems and structures in their lives that are helping them to do those things, right? They have the accountability of a coach or a support system or a partner or someone who they know is going to hold them accountable to have those behaviors, right? They probably, because they have the heightened awareness and they have mind management skills, they're able to form habits much easier. And then their behavior in turn becomes more regular and easier to do and more automatic. And so what people think is that like discipline is a quality that you can or cannot have. Like you are disciplined or you aren't disciplined, which is a fixed mindset, right? And so instead, I want you to imagine that your ability to direct your own behavior is a result of a bunch of tools in your mental toolbox. If you only have a hammer, you absolutely cannot make a chair. But if you have a hammer and you have some nails and you have some wood, then you probably can create a chair. So if you cannot create the behaviors you want in your life, it is probably because you're lacking one of the mental skills you need in order to actually like have that tool in your toolbox so you can do the thing. And I know that this is true because A, it's supported by research, but B, I run a behavior change coaching program. We've had almost 100 clients go through it since August, and I have literally seen them change their lives and work out consistently and eat more vegetables and go to sleep on time and time manage and follow their calendar and get things done at work and all these other things because we gave them these research-based mental mindset tools that helped them develop what other people would call discipline.
And people think that they can do everything on their own. They're afraid to ask for help. I think that's the biggest thing that holds a lot of people back. because that's usually the thing that I come across with people who are asking for, well, that is struggling. It's like they are so warped up, as we spoke about before, in the predicaments of the past, that they won't even ask for help to develop the tools to move them forward. And you don't just find these tools, and you can't solve a problem with the same identity, behaviors, beliefs, actions that got you to where you are now. And you're not just going to fix those because you're still the same person. You need to employ the help, ask for the help, do something, get someone else on board to help you shift those things, because that is you until you then change that. And something else that you said, which I love, is the how with the mind management. This is something that happens a lot with people who are struggling to wake up. And because that was the theme just then, it's okay, cool and all. We start a habit, we do it for a while, and then we fall off. And then with what you said, cognitive awareness and flexibility, because we need to be willing to be flexible with that as well. But the thing is, a lot of people don't take failure well. So they'll slip off once and then they'll go back to their old habit of, oh my God, I am a failure. Oh my God, this is repeating the past. So how can we link that into probably like the leopard print skirt, but like finding this hard way with a new way of eating and then continuing it on. Same with waking up and showing up consistently.
Yeah. So one of the things that I like people to think about is that if you can't do the exact behavior that you want to do, you can still act as the person you want to be, right? So in the way our coaching program is set up is people have four core behaviors that they track every single day, but we also have them pick four core qualities they want to embody, right? And I do this too for myself. So one of the qualities that I want to embody right now is intentionality, like being intentional specifically with my time. Okay. So let's say that on my calendar at 8 a.m., it says that I'm supposed to wake up. And let's say that I don't wake up until 8:45. Okay. If I'm only focused on achieving the habit of waking up at 8 o'clock every day, then at 8:45, when I wake up, I've already failed. Right. And so that's going to threaten my sense of competence. It's going to threaten my ability to reach my goals. Like, I'm going to have a bunch of issues with that. But if I am working towards being an intentional version of myself, if I am anchored in that quality, I can ask myself, okay, like, what does the intentional version of myself do in this moment? Right. So instead of asking yourself, like, instead of hoping for a world where you do a particular behavior indefinitely for the rest of forever, every single day, ask yourself, if 5 years from now, I knew for sure that I was eating a serving of vegetables every day with lunch, and I skipped a serving of vegetables, what would that future version of me think about that skip? Like, how would she handle it? How would she scale that problem? Right? Maybe she would pick the closest thing. So she'd do a serving of fruit instead, right? Maybe she just double up at dinner time, right? Your future self isn't a version of you that never makes mistakes. Your future self is a version of you that copes way better with the same mistakes that you're making now.
That's pretty much the all or nothing mindset. And that's a great way to lead into that as well, because our mindset on behavior is often black and white. Like, we either do it or we don't. We either give 100% or we don't. Oh, I can't do it right, so why would I bother doing it at all? And that's not really how behavior change works. So maybe we can kind of feed into that a little bit more and how that holds people back. But bring in the, I still remember, it was my favorite post, snakes and ladders.
Yes, yes. So with, so there's a game in America, it's called Chutes and Ladders. In other places, it's called Snakes and Ladders, right? I'm sure you've seen it, right? And so I encourage people to think about habit formation like that, right? So there are always going to be moments, opportunities in your life where you get to take a ladder and you get to up-level your habit. And those moments are the moments when it is actually most difficult. So those are the moments where, like, you've told yourself you were gonna do a run 4 days a week and it's your last day of week to do it and you're traveling and you're on vacation, but you wanna hold yourself to that commitment. If you do that in that moment, that's a ladder. It's gonna take you up to the next level because you're acting in accordance with the identity you want, right? But there are also going to be shoots, right? Moments where you fall off the wagon for a minute. And when those happen, we don't just abandon the game, right? We don't just like take our little, you know, icon and throw it across the room. We know that there's always another ladder available that's probably only two little blocks away. And so I want you to think about like when you were a kid and when you slid down that big ladder and you were so freaking disappointed in yourself, what did you do? You traced where, like, oh, look at this. Where's the next ladder? And you figured out how to get there. And you were crossing your fingers that you rolled the right amount of dice to get to that next big ladder. And so what if you adopted that same mindset? You learned from each one of those shoots. You reflected on the mistakes you made. And then you turned your attention towards the next moment you had available to take yourself up another level.
I really loved that analogy as well, because it's like, okay, cool, it's also two squares away, but what if you don't roll two? You roll again and you keep rolling again until you get another ladder. But the thing is, it's not even about the ladders. It's the fact that you're still moving forward. And people think they need to make monumental ladder changes, but you don't need to. Like, you're still moving up the board. You're not going backwards. You're going, like, that's the other thing that a lot of people struggle with. But, right, the biggest topic I wanted to talk about. So this leopard skirt. A lot of people tie themselves to an identity, and you do make the changes. And this feeds into, yeah, we make the changes, but it's so easy to go back to who we were, because people, like, we had people that also related to our suffering. We had people to share our suffering with, share our struggles with. We had people who knew that past self of ours, that we struggled to become a new person for whatever reason it is. But that's what you're about to talk about, because it's probably the thing that stops people having the growth mindset, because they don't realize that they have the fear that they're tying themselves to this old version of themselves, because other people, like, we're human beings. We love connection. We love being validated. It's like the Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Yeah. Well, so let me tell the story. So, I'm a person who has generally dressed in very plain clothes, like jeans and a t-shirt. I would have told you, like, I don't understand fashion, right? Very like basic, not interested in super girly stuff. But recently I was working on becoming my 2.0 self, and I was essentially reinventing myself using my own techniques and tools and practices and things like that. And so I knew I wanted to do like a closet clean out. And so I was asking myself, like, okay, the CEO version of me who's owning, like, you know, a multi-million-dollar company, which is not where I am at yet, but like we're getting there, right? The CEO version of me who's like strong and active and healthy and owns this company and does all these things, like, what does she wear, right? What does she do? And so I found on the internet this leopard print skirt. And I actually, like, I had hired a stylist who recommended it to me. And I saw it on the list and I was like, oh, no, 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 no. That is not the kind of thing I would wear. Like, that is not at all who I am, right? But I bought it because I knew in order to become a different person, I have to make different decisions than I had before, right? So I was like, okay, I'm going to buy this skirt because old Karin wouldn't. Right? So I buy this skirt and I get it to my house, and my boyfriend looks at me and he's like, that? Like, you're going to wear that? I was like, I don't know, John, like, maybe. And so I put on the skirt and I looked at myself in the mirror and I actually really liked it. But I was terrified of wearing it anywhere where I would have seen like people I knew, friends, family out in public, because I was afraid of their reaction. I was afraid of them negotiating the ways that I had changed, right? And so I think the message here is that, like, it's safe to be consistent and it's safe to do what you've always done, right? So another classic example is, like, like a year ago, I was at a restaurant with my friend, and there was, like, a soft pretzel on the appetizer menu, but I was tracking macros and I didn't have the macros for that. And I really wanted to order this salad that actually sounded really good, but I almost didn't order the salad because I was so worried about what everyone else might think. And so if you're a person who has, you know, never been into, like, fitness and exercise, or has never eaten a healthy diet, or has never been the kind of person who like managed her time well or whatever, it might feel intimidating to show up and violate someone else's expectations of what you think they think you're gonna do, right? And the reason for that is because, exactly like you said, we have one of our fundamental psychological needs is relatedness, right? We need to feel connected to other people. And so if we all of a sudden violate expectations and, you know, act in a really different way, we know that's going to throw off our connection to other people, and that can be very threatening. But if you want to become a different person, you have to make different decisions. And if you continue to make the same decisions, you will continue to be the same person. And so that's where we have to be able to say, I am willing to put this on the line. I am willing to make someone else uncomfortable because I am standing up for the person I want to be.
I want to read out a little bit of what I copy pasted from that post because it's so powerful. So when it comes to change, it's because as humans, we have expectations for others' behavior. We know others have expectations of us. Well, we don't know that. We think that. We violate those expectations and we feel uncomfortable and we go back into our safety zone, which is where we actually don't like being. It's uncomfortable because when things meet our expectations, we can control them. We can predict everything and that makes us feel safe. But when something unexpected happens, we lose that sense of control and predictability. And the thing is, change isn't something you can really control. You can either have change or control. You can't have both. And if you only act in predictable ways, you're going to get the same outcomes as always because, hey, it's predictable. It's what you've always done. And something that I heard on a podcast, which I love, is you are not who you think you are, but you are also not who others think you are. You are who you think others think you are because you try to live up to that certain, it's like a brain twister, but I sat on it for a while and it's like, it's so true. It's like, you don't even know how others think about you. It's your perception of what they think about you. And the quote, like the title you had on this post is, you're allowed to surprise people. The biggest fear. And the word that I love in that whole post is the word control. And that's something I see with a lot of my girls. And even just on social media in general, people need to have a sense of control over something, even in relationships. And that can lead to relationship breakdowns. It's this need for control that becomes the very thing that pulls everything apart.
Yeah. Well, and one of the ways to then retake control of that unexpectedness is to be surprising on purpose. Right. So we have like curriculum for our clients. And one of the curriculum pieces we have is an unexpectedness challenge. So every day for 7 days, they have to report on what they did to be unexpected, either to themselves or to someone else. And so that's a really fun game to play with yourself, is to ask, like, what behavior am I going to surprise myself with today? Like, what decision is going to be unexpected for me? Because if it feels surprising or unexpected or not what you usually would have done, it is absolutely something that's probably driving you towards your future self. And if you, like, let's say you're going to like a family barbecue, if you take ownership of that and you were like, I'm going to be as unexpected as possible today. And you walk in there all confident with your tray full of veggies and someone makes a comment and you're like, yeah, I'm on a health kick, right? Like, all of a sudden you have control over the situation because it's not like you're trying to hide the way you're different. It's like, hi, I'm different than I was before. Let me be loud and proud about it. And then it's actually going to reinforce that new person you're becoming.
I actually love the tonality you used. And that's something that a lot of people don't use. They don't have the confidence to use it. It's the way you said it so excitedly. And that was something that you just reminded me of, is what kept me going to the gym. It's like, I'm going to the gym. I feel so freaking good. I don't really, but I'm going to say it anyway. I feel so good. Like, this was such a good workout. I felt like shit because I didn't want to go. Like, you talk the excitedness into yourself that you start to believe it. But if you don't believe in yourself and bring in that self-belief again, you're not going to really be excited about the thing. And I do that when I don't even want to show up to the gym. I get myself excited about it because it's the only way that I'm going to show up and do my best that I can that day. And I know that I'm going to thank myself for it. And that's why I also take selfies after every single session. It's like, I showed up today. It felt awesome. But people just aren't willing to be that outward with things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think it's not necessarily a willingness. It's that people don't have the cognitive tools that they need in order to generate like that kind of confidence, right? And so like what I always tell people is like, live in the hypothetical, right? Tell yourself, like, if I was excited for the gym, why would I be excited about it, right? If I was gonna eat healthy today, what would I eat, right? Because that gives your brain the safety of saying, this isn't real, this isn't a decision I'm making, I'm just hypothetically thinking about it. But then what happens is you start visualizing it, and once you start visualizing it, it becomes more real to you, right? So if you are stressed out about something, if you are worried about something, if you're not feeling confident, if you're not feeling like you accomplished something, ask yourself, like, what could be fun about this? What could be a challenge about this? What could be interesting about this? Like, if I did have fun doing this, why would I have fun? And asking yourself those questions can start to like just gently redirect the narrative that's going down in your brain into something that's going to be more productive.
I love that. The very last thing that I really wanted to talk about is the little devil that stops a lot of people from continuing on with things, and that's procrastination. And then the following self-talk that prevents the acting part, but then the fact that you're not acting, which leads to the self-talk, which leads to the procrastination, which leads to the self-talk, and it's just this vicious cycle.
Yeah. So procrastination is really an umbrella term for a bunch of different behaviors. So if you told me, if we were playing like charades and you were like, procrastination, act it out, like there would be a million different things that I could act out. And so that's the first tip that I give people, is to stop calling it procrastination and actually start identifying what behaviors you're doing when you're so supposedly procrastinating, right? So for a lot of people, that is like scrolling on your phone, scrolling on TikTok, right? So once you figure out what the exact behavior is, like, I'm baking instead of going to the gym, right? I am answering emails instead of meal prepping, right? Whatever the behavior is that you're procrastinating with, even if that behavior is I'm laying on the couch instead of getting up and going for my run, then ask yourself, okay, what is motivating me to do that behavior? Like, what are the actual very good reasons that I am doing this? Because a lot of people just like brush it off as procrastination. And they're like, oh, I'm just a lazy person. I just procrastinate. And it's like, no, no, no. You are really stressed out. And so you are sitting on your phone scrolling, because sitting on your phone scrolling is a safe behavior. And it was regulating your nervous system. It was making you feel calm and in control, which was something you psychologically needed in that moment. Right? And so if you understand what you need, if you understand what you're getting out of a certain behavior, then you can get that same benefit from the behaviors you actually want to engage in. So if I sit down on the couch and I'm like, oh, I'm really stressed out, if I'm aware of that, then I can say, hey, I'm really stressed out. I'm going to go for a walk, because that is a healthy way of coping with that stress, rather than sitting on my phone and ignoring it the next half an hour and doing what I will later consider to be, quote, procrastinating.
That is such a powerful point, because people do not want to stop and feel their feelings. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to stop and feel your feelings, you're going to keep doing the same shit that that is just a coping mechanism that is faulty in so-called sense. And people don't understand what they need, so then they do what they think they need to do. And I just love everything you said about that one. I don't know if you have any other example you can bring into it, because like even when it comes to emotional eating kind of thing, it's people are in such a rush through life. They live the friggin' like, they live like a minor Monday to Friday, like doing the hard yaks. And then on the weekend, it's like, finally I get to relieve myself. And then that leads into like, even at the end of the night, that's why people go to food, because that's giving some type of comfort. Because the way you've been approaching your whole life is busy, busy, busy. I need to live to this, live to that. And it's all this, people have so much to do on, so much to do on their plate, but is all of that really needed? Maybe that can like sum it up.
Yeah. Yeah. So first of all, I will say that like for a lot of people, this is something that needs to be like, that's out of my scope of practice. It's out of everyone's scope of practice. That's a coach. It's something that needs to be covered with a therapist, because we are people who were raised in the 80s and 90s. And in the 80s and 90s, it was very common in parenting, not to like blame everybody's parents, but it was very common to be told like, don't cry, stop crying, don't show your emotions. And so it's very, for us, it's very normal. And it feels very much like what we're supposed to do is not recognize or deal with our emotions or let them come up. Okay. But your brain's number one responsibility in your body is to keep your body safe and keep your body at certain levels, okay? And so I want you to imagine that it's like 8 p.m. and all of a sudden you start thinking about the next day and you start stressing out about work and thinking about all the things you haven't done and thinking about all the things you need to do. Guess what happens? Your cortisol starts to creep up. Your heart rate is starting to go really fast, right? What does your brain do? Your brain is like, oh no, warning sign, body is in distress. What can we do to give body something that will make it calm down? What can we do to get body out of worry? Guess what is a really easy thing that's going to get you out of worry? Food. And so your body is going to drive you towards that food with a very, very intense amount of like push, right? You're going to feel a strong craving for that cupcake, because as soon as you eat it, your heart rate's going to calm down. You're going to feel less stressed, even for just a minute. And you do get that reward of body is safe. So what you need to do is you need to learn to make yourself safe in ways other than food, so that it's not always relying on distraction mechanisms like eating or scrolling or, you know, procrastinating in various ways to deal with those emotions.
I think we just ended on probably the most important thing of this whole podcast, because I'm sure you can agree that's something that most people do struggle with. And we aren't even aware of it until we slow down, until we allow ourselves to feel things, because it's so much easier to get something within reach than it is to do the hard thing, again, the resistance thing, and sit with ourselves. And I really encourage every single person to listen to this twice, because everything's related. Like that facing the hard, that facing the resistance, that person we used to be, the lack of belief in ourselves keeps us repeating the same patterns and keeps us going to the same coping mechanisms until they no longer exist. And then we find them through something else, which can just lead to repeating the same toxic cycles that keep us stuck, whether it's food, bad relationships, alcohol, whatever it is. So I guess with that, is there any way you would like to sum up this podcast before I let you plug your amazingness at the end?
I would just say that remember that everything, every behavior you do, there is probably a very good reason you're doing it. And the best way to change those behaviors, especially those ones that feel unconscious or out of your control, is to figure out that reason.
That is powerful. Figure out the reason that you do what you do, because there is a reason you think what you think. There is a reason you do what you do. And there is a series there are a series of reasons and events and things that made you become the person you are today. So with that, I am so grateful for you coming on and speaking words of wisdom. I cannot wait to release this in the next couple of weeks. And with that, plug your courses, plug your whatever it is, because I'm going to put them down in there anyway, but it's just the most important tide of change that people need to make to start becoming more consistent with the habits they need to do, which they know they need to do, but, you know, it's kind of comfortable to just sit on the couch and eat popcorn.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll tell you about three things. So number one, where most people start is I have a $37 Meaningful Mornings mini course. And it's all about the mindset and behavior change skills you need to build a morning routine that you'll actually follow and you actually love. I will not require you to get up at 5 a.m. and I will not mention the morning routines of any Silicon Valley white dude CEO. And that I promise to you, okay? Because that's all the morning stuff that's out there. It's like, well, Bill Gates goes on his treadmill and then jumps around and then drinks a green juice. And it's like that. It's not like that. So that's where a lot of people start. So I would look into that. If you're interested in one-on-one coaching, I do have a one-on-one coaching practice. We have three assistant coaches that all coach on behavior change. We have a lot of people who have a nutrition coach at the same time. So if you are working with Ruby or if you are working with a nutrition coach, it's perfectly fine to do it at the same time. And we will just support you doing the behaviors you need to do in order to work with the things you're working with them. And then if you happen to be a coach listening to this, because I know coaches listen to other coaches' podcasts all the time, part of why I can explain things the way I can and part of why what I do has been so successful is because I have a high level of knowledge around curriculum design. And so I actually have a course, it's called 6-Hour Syllabus. It's for coaches and it teaches you how to build your first course. So the reason that I just pumped Meaningful Mornings is because Meaningful Mornings, 83% of the people who come to our coaching program have already done Meaningful Mornings. It's an amazing conversion tool. It gets us one-on-one clients all the time. And so I teach coaches and business owners in 6-Hour Syllabus how to create their first course. And so if you're a coach, definitely check that out.
I love that so much. Thank you for coming on. And I really hope you guys get so much from this podcast. And if you do, please message us. It would be amazing. Don't forget to give this podcast 5 stars because I'm pushing that a little bit more now. But thank you, thank you, thank you. And you guys will hear me on the next episode.